You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Back here on the Roto Experts on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Scott England, George Kurtz talking some fantasy baseball here as we get ready for another week. Go to rotoexperts.com and check out our Fantasy Baseball Weekly Planner. And our waiver report will be out today from Cam Jayagrande. So look at some early save leaders. Guy got in three of my four leagues. Was somebody that I couldn't believe I got for just $5 in an auction. Jerry's Familia, who is, as the Mets have gotten off to an 11-2 start, has registered 7 saves so far with a 0.78 whip, and he has not allowed a single run in 8 appearances, which means he's going to allow one today because I just said that. But Familia has been terrific so far, and there were some rumors during the offseason that maybe that Mickey Callaway might use a bullpen by committee approach here, or might use Familia in a Andrew Miller type role where just throw him out there when the matchup is right. But that hasn't happened. Mickey Callaway knows who his closer is. There's been a few times here where he's put some runners on base, 7 base runners allowed so far, but he's putting the fire out for the most part and has really gotten the job done so far. Familia looks like he's back to being the guy that he was 2 years ago.
Yeah, for the Mets, I just hope the Mets play today, as I have Thor starting in a couple of leagues. If you read the closer report, which I post every Tuesday on Roto Experts, From day one, I wasn't worried about Familia. I did hear what Callaway said, but then you heard the pitching coach pretty much say that almost the next day, Familia was the lead role. And they were going to do that. I think, once again, I do like the idea that your best reliever shouldn't be stuck to the ninth inning. If the game's over in the sixth, game's going to be determined in the seventh inning, that's when they should pitch. But we all know, in today's day and age, you're going to have agents blowing up your phone complaining about that, because then their players won't get paid, because there's no stat for that. No one cares about holds as far as money, making money. So I was never worried about Familia. Like you, Scott, the only league I don't have Familia in is the, and this is God's honest truth, is my home league, because he was kept. Other than that, because of his price, you'd be able to get him so late and everything. Everyone was worried about AJ Ramos splitting saves or whatever it might be. I love what Familia's doing so far. I certainly don't hope he, I don't want him to give up a run today, because I need that a win from Thor. But Familia's fine. If you draft the Familia, you're winning.
Yeah, Familia is one of the one of the guys on the Mets that is very well liked in the clubhouse, etc. And the difference between this team is, and you'll hear we'll talk to Michael Conforto in the third hour, is A, they're healthy. And B, the reason I talk about being well-liked is this team has some really, really good chemistry. When you look at a guy like Adrian Gonzalez, it's something that you don't see from the outside. People are like, why did they sign him? He didn't put up any numbers. He got hurt. Adrian Gonzalez is a strong clubhouse presence who is a great influence on a lot of the younger players. Todd Frazier. Even Craig Carton said during the week, he said on Carton and Friends, he goes, all right, let's slow down. The guy's a career 218 hitter. Todd Frazier has, it's early. Todd Frazier has been a significant influence in the Mets clubhouse, as a positive influence. And, you need those kind of guys in the clubhouse to stir positive chemistry and intangibles if you're going to be a winning team. And Todd Frazier's been at the center of that. Adrian Gonzalez, Jay Bruce, Jose Reyes still there. 4 guys who's really, really regarded as strong clubhouse presences, mentors to younger players, player coaches, if you will. And I was talking to Jose Reyes on Friday, and he said, Frazier reminds me of myself. He keeps the team loose. He keeps us cracking up. But, he's also very vocal when it comes to baseball fundamentals, and he knows when to be serious. This is what people don't see from the outside, and the reason why this team has gotten off to the start that they've gotten off to.
Yeah, I'm probably going to have to claim Frazier this week in one league because I'm a Josh Donaldson owner, an unhappy Josh Donaldson owner. It's in a league where we drafted very early, and now he's on with DL, and I'm probably going to have to grab Frazier as there's just not much out there. Pretty much either Todd Frazier or Josh Harrison for me, Scott. Which one?
Yeah, I'd probably go Frazier there. And if you're an on-base percentage league, Frazier certainly gives you an advantage. Brad Hand has been everything that they've wanted him to be so far. Cha-Cha's favorite player so far with 14 strikeouts in 9 innings. I'm sure he's going to buy a jersey.
All right. I'm afraid to ask this, but I have to. Why is he Cha-Cha's favorite player?
I think it's sort of obvious. You can hit him up on Cha-Cha Zone on Twitter and ask him.
Oh, you're afraid to. You're afraid to say why. You brought it up.
Look, you know, the guy likes his hand. What can I say?
Yeah, that's where I figured we were going with that. It is Cha-Cha, after all. My only worry about Brad Hand is they tried to trade him most of last or before the deadline last year, even though some talks during the season, during the offseason. I think those talks will heat up again before this year's trade deadline. And then you're sort of playing Russian roulette. Does he end up with a team that needs a closer? You know, if he gets to odds are no. Because odds are he's being traded, he's going to be traded to a team that has an established closer, which can become more of a setup man. So that's my only worry with Brad Hand, is that I think he will get moved eventually, and it may not be to a team that will use him as a closer. Until then, however, he's valuable. He picks up saves, and I'm not afraid of getting a closer on a bad team. You know, they're going to win their share of games, too, and if they're a bad team, a lot of those games will be close.
Yeah, that's the thing about closers on bad teams. Brad Boxberger was a guy that I got very late, got him for the reserve round in Tout Wars. Everybody thought Archie Bradley was going to get the job, but Tony Cincotta had a guest on the weekend edition during spring training. An Arizona beat writer said Boxberger was going to get the job, and that's what he's done. He's been very effective. 7 innings pitch. He has not allowed a run so far, and he struck out 10 guys. I have Familian Boxberger in one league. You know, I'm very, very happy. And it seems like they're going to leave Bradley in middle relief, even though he got one save to replace Boxberger when he was getting a little bit overworked early on. I don't see any indication that Bradley's going to get this job anytime soon. You talk about Boxberger, a hard-throwing guy who had 41 saves a few years ago.
Yeah, Bradley didn't do anything to lose the job, but he fell into the Josh Hader category, where, once again, they believe he's better pitching in multiple innings. And I can't disagree, because I think that is the way to win games. Even if you believe that Bradley's a better pitcher than Boxberger, he's still more valuable to the team if he can get 4, 5, 6 outs, rather than those automatic 3 in the 9th inning. You know, I mean, listen, I understand closing's hard. I know you and Corey Parson had a discussion a few years ago, and I agree with you that not everybody can close. You know, it does take a certain mentality to close. But, you know, that doesn't automatically mean you need your best reliever in the 9th inning. I guess sometimes games are determined in the 7th inning. I wish more teams would actually do this. I understand it's very difficult. You know, players then don't know when they'll warm up because they don't know when they're going to be brought into a game. Agents go bananas because they're not getting their saves, the counting numbers. I get it. But I like what Arizona's done. You know, Bradley may be a better reliever than Boxberger, but he's more valuable to the team pitching in the middle innings, 6th, 7th, 8th innings. I like it. It's what the Yankees were doing with Betances at one point before he just imploded.
Look, and, you know, being on the MLB beat that I am, you know, I believe certain things that, you know, other people outside of that won't necessarily subscribe to, whereas I believe this just strongly talking to players, coaches, etc. I believe there's a different mentality that you have to be a closer in the 9th inning. And I think Boxberger has already shown that he's had it. We don't know if Archie Bradley has a closer mentality or not. We don't know if he's mentally suited for the 9th inning or not.
That's true. I mean, we don't know. It's tough. Getting the last 3 outs of a game is probably the hardest thing to do in baseball. You know, because they're trying to score that last run, so they're only down one run. They're not trying. It's just a different mentality the hitters are going at there. So it is hard. And it's also probably one of the hardest positions in sports because you blow 2 saves, forget about it. Everyone wants your job. Media's calling for it. The fans hate you. The pressure's on the manager because you're blowing games where the win was expected. It's just different giving up 5 runs in the 1st inning. Okay, you never had a chance to win that game. You know, you had a 4-3 lead in the ninth. You gave up two runs. It's like the air just gets sucked out of the stadium, gets sucked out of the balloon, and everyone's calling for your head if you do that multiple times. Even if you're a great pitcher, you know, it doesn't stop. It's a very volatile position. It's tough to do. So I'm on board with you. I do think it takes a certain mentality to close out a game.
Talking about volatile, Alex Colome, and don't forget that George does the closer report on Roto Experts every Tuesday and Wednesday, and you always want to check that out. Alex Colome so far, 3 saves, but 2 of them have been blown. 3.20 whip, 10.80 ERA, 5 innings pitch, 12 hits, 6 earned runs. Is Colome in danger of losing this job, George? And if so, is it going to be bullpen by committee if he does?
I mean, 10.8 ERA, 3.2 whip. That's not good.
Velocity not good looks like all. It's down too. Yeah.
Yeah, is you're right. But he's still throwing 94 plus. But it's not the 95 what he was throwing last year. So it's down. But I don't think it's down dramatically. Where that's the issue here. Now, one word of caution here before we all start getting rid of him. Both blown saves against the Red Sox. Okay, so I'll give him a little bit here. Red Sox, we know they're lighting it up. And the ERA, let's face it, for a reliever, you know, you have one or two bad outings, the ERA is going to climb. It's just going to be astronomical, and it takes a long time to work that down. I don't think he's in danger of losing his job. Because, once again, I think this is another guy that the Rays want to trade. And it makes a lot of sense. The Rays aren't going to be a good team. They're not really ready to compete in that division yet. He's 29 years old, I believe, Colome, so you don't really need a closer. By the time you're ready to compete, he'll be in his low 30s. So I think they want to move him, so I think they'll keep him in that role just to have him recover so they can trade him. Also, there's really nobody else in that team. And Jose Alvarado, Sergio Romo, forget about it. You know, those aren't the – it's not like they have a top young guy to get in there. So I think Colome is safe in that regards. I said I'm willing to give him a pass. It was the Red Sox. Red Sox are as hot. You know, Red Sox and Mets, you said it earlier, are the two hottest teams in baseball. Maybe we want to throw the Angels in there as well. So I'm willing to give him a pass there. I think he keeps the job. But I think as the season goes along, we're going to hear his name in rumors a lot. And he's going to have the same problem as Brad Hand. He may not get traded to a team that's going to use him as a closer. So eventually when he fixes himself, a month, 6 weeks, 8 weeks down the line, you may want to try and move him before you have that problem.
Yeah, I wouldn't give him a pass. I mean, you're a closer. Your job is to lock down the other team no matter who it is, whether it's the Marlins or the Red Sox. And you don't get it done, you don't get it done. You're in danger of losing your job. And you know, at some point, you know, it could go to a committee where I say, okay, whoever pitches the best steps up and maybe an unknown, you know, moves forward. Because yeah, I'm not going to give him a pass based on the opposition. You're supposed to do your job.
They're not going to take him out, though. If they do that, they're shooting themselves in the foot. Winning games is important, but not as important for Tampa Bay. It's more important that he reestablish himself as the closer, that he's good, and that they can trade him.
They have to give him a leash, but it's at some point, if he keeps screwing up, you know, they do want to win some games or maybe find out if they have somebody else there. And you know, you talk about an unknown stepping up. You know, nobody expected Kenyon Middleton to be the guy for the Angels. So far, he has been with 4 saves, 4 opportunities, 9 2/3 innings pitch, 6 hits. He has walked 4, and he only has struck out 7. What do you think the job security is like for Kenyon Middleton? He's been getting the job so fun, but he has done so far, but he hasn't been exactly dominant.
I've been writing about Middleton since last year on the Closer Report. I actually like the kid as far as what they have. I mean, I don't know why Socha doesn't like Bedrosian or doesn't give him a legitimate shot to hold the role down. Maybe it's because he can't stay healthy for any amount of time. Maybe he doesn't have that closer mentality because he has struggled when he has been a closer at a time or two. I just don't think he's been given a legitimate shot there. Parker certainly doesn't seem to be the answer. He struggled. He came out of the game again last night after giving up a run, so he's struggling. You know, Bedrosian hasn't pitched well this year yet either, 6.35 ERA. How do I feel? I mean, do I think Middleton's going to keep the job? No. I mean, I wonder if it's going to be a sort of a mix and match, Middleton, Bedrosian, Parker, until one of these three figures it out. You know, I think Middleton right now is the guy, so he's certainly in, you want to call it the catbird seat? He's the leader here, but you want your reliever to strike out guys, and he's not doing that right now, putting the ball in play a lot, and that generally can be a little dangerous. So I think he's the guy you want right now, Scott, but could change next week, next month. You know, maybe they're a team, now that they're competing, that wouldn't shock me. They'll be the team that's in line to pick up a Brad Hand, pick up a Conley, so that when those guys become on the market, I think they're looking for an established closer because I don't think he's on the roster.
Yeah, and what about in St. Louis? You know, they picked up Greg Holland, but hasn't done well so far. And Bud Norris, you know, who was a surprise closer last year, has already saved two games. And, you know, Norris showed last year that he could remake himself to being a fireman.
Once again, is this Holland spring training? He only signed, what, 2.5 weeks ago, and I think they rushed him a little bit here. You know, the same problem I think is happening with Marcus Stroman. I think these teams, with Stroman, he got hurt during early in spring training, and then they rushed him back to start the fourth game of the season. But Greg Holland, he just signed. You know, so I think he's going to go through some bumps in the road here. But I think he will be. You're not paying him $14 million a year to set up, not after one bad game. So I think that he will get the shot again. Norris is the guy you want in the short term. If I had Norris, probably starting him next week, but eventually Holland's going to take over that role. Could be Tuesday, could be Thursday, could be next weekend. We don't know, but it will be Holland eventually.
Yeah, for right now, like you said, though, Norris is a nice bridge, and if Holland turns out to be a failure, it wouldn't be surprising to me to see Norris hold the job for the whole year. Back to Roto Experts at the Park next, Milwaukee Brewers edition. We'll be talking to first baseman Eric Thames, so make sure you stay tuned for that. You're listening to the Roto Experts Weekly Edition with Scott Engel and George Kurtz, coming to you every Sunday right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. And we hope you always listen to us on demand.
If you're playing daily fantasy basketball on DraftKings or FanDuel this NBA season, you need to sign up for Daily Roto. Built by a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. Better yet, you can save 10% off using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium to learn more about their product.
Back here on the Roto Experts on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. And time to go back to At the Park with the Milwaukee Brewers. And Eric Thames is a guy that I got in Tout Wars for $8. And, you know, this is a guy that got off to a terrific start last year and is doing it again. As this series began with the Mets on Friday, he had 16 home runs in the month of April over the last 2 years, the most in the majors. So Eric Thames is off to another quick start, and here is my interview with the Milwaukee Brewers first baseman. Scott Engel here with Eric Thames of the Brewers. Eric, what is it about you in April? 16 home runs the last two Aprils, the most in the majors.
See, it's a lot of luck. I mean, this is really nothing different. I'm just trying to have quality at bats and get on base for the guys, you know, hitting in front of me and behind me.
What do you think is the key to stretching that kind of success over a full season now?
Being able to let go of, like, the stress. Like, last year I put a lot of pressure on myself, and towards the end of the year, towards, like, June, and I just, like, was tapped out mentally. So this year I'm just kind of taking it all in stride, just trying to have quality at bats.
So it was about maybe like being back in the majors for the first year in a long time and getting acclimated again?
Yeah, definitely. Like learning the new pitchers, learning like the catchers, everything. So this year, you know, I would say I'm in a better spot than I was last year.
What about the fact that, you know, they're using Ryan Braun and Jesus against lefties? You know, would that give you more of an opportunity to rest and, you know, spread out the numbers more over a full season?
I mean, for me, honest, like playing every day, I mean, that's like everybody. You want to play every day. But, you know, I can't really control who makes the lineup. I can't control a lot of things. So all I can do is, you know, prepare the best I can and go out there and perform.
Have you been working, you know, diligently on trying to improve against lefties?
Yeah. It's a lot easier when you see them every day. But, you know, when you're facing the guys, you know, in the eighth and ninth inning, they're nasty. It's tougher. But, you know, there's really no excuse. You know, like I've been hitting off crawl machines, and whoever BP throws is a lefty. So I've been hitting off him a lot. And, yeah, just working for it.
How are you a different player now than you were your first time around in the majors?
Like last year or like the time before that?
Your career when you went back in America?
Less of a head case, I would say. When I was younger, it was all like, I mean, it was tough. I mean, as a young player coming up, you know, if you're 0-for-8, you know, you might get sent down, stuff like that. So I put a lot of pressure on myself to perform and just snowballed. And now I'm more relaxed, you know, I'm wiser with my age. So yeah, just experience.
Do you think going to Korea, you know, made you a better player in some ways, and how?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just gaining more life experience. I feel like that gave me a different perspective, and, you know, obviously that kind of leaks into stuff outside of just life, you know, just like with baseball and my family, relationships and stuff like that. So it helped me a lot.
Did you develop a taste for the food over there, and is anything comparable here in terms of Korean barbecue back in the States?
Well, I mean, like, I feel like every major city has a good Korean barbecue spot, but me, I love steak and all that stuff, so I love it.
So, not that you know how it works, but when people like me say, Eric, I drafted you on my fantasy baseball team for the power, do you take it as a compliment? Because it's almost like the modern day equivalent of being on a baseball card.
Yeah, definitely. It's a big compliment. But also for me, it's, you know, I have to keep performing because obviously guys can trade you away and drop you like that. So I have to keep doing my job, keep performing.
Eric, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you.
Eric Tame's always a very interesting and candid interview, George, as you heard. He said that he's a different player than he was early in his career. He's now 31, although really, really fantasy relevant only for the last two seasons. Says he was more of a head case earlier in his career. And we were talking about the run that he had with Toronto and Seattle from 2011 to 2012 before he went off to Korea, like he said, gained more life experience, et cetera, became a different player, and then, you know, boomed onto the fantasy scene last April. But I really like his perspectives. You know, he was very forthcoming about his struggles after April last year, too.
Yeah, he in most interviews, he's been very open and honest, which is good for him. I wish more players were like that. They seem they get more trouble when they try and hide things, and it's easy to see an interview, or they start using cliche central, which we all know how much you'd love that. Fantasy-wise, you look at Tames, listen, you know the average is going to hurt you. The other issue is, you know, I understand some people won't believe this. Last year, 31 home runs, 63 RBI. Seems to be Kevin Moss disease. This year, 5 home runs, 7 RBIs. Boy, he's hitting a lot of solo home runs. You know, people on base, he doesn't seem to be able to do the same damage there. You know, so that's going to be an issue there. Right now, he's a one-category guy, just the home runs. That's it. He's not even driving enough runs to be, to really put him in the fantasy lineup. So that's going to be an issue for me.
Yeah, and last year, he came out with the April at 345 with 11 home runs and 19 RBIs. So to your point, even when he was so hot last April, it wasn't with a lot of runners on base. But you know, that could turn around because this organization has a newfound mentality. And here's what I mean. Over the last 2 years, the Brewers led the league in strikeouts, so guys weren't getting on base ahead of him. Now, Christian Yelich has been out, but you know, when Tames is in the lineup and he's got Yelich and Lorenzo Cain, two of the better on-base percentage guys in the league, hitting ahead of him, he should have more RBI opportunities, or at least that is the hope from the Brewers' perspective.
Well, that is the hope. And, you know, once again, it comes down to what you believe. Is he not hitting because there's nobody not driving in runs because there's nobody on base in front of him? Not his fault. Is he not hitting because, you know, he struggles with people on base? You know, tightens up a little bit, gripping the bat a little tighter. You know, actually, it comes down to what you believe there. I know a lot of people believe that RBIs have nothing to do with the hitter. It's all about the players in front of them. You know, they hit the same way no matter what. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think people do change sometimes when there's people on base, a little bit more pressure on you. Speaking of Christian Yelich, he will not. There was some thought that he might come off the DL today. He will not. He's still not 100% recovered from the oblique injury, so he will not be activated today.
And then Eric Tames also talked about the fact that he started putting more pressure on himself after the good start. In May, he had 221 with 3 home runs and 9 RBIs. He said, I was kind of mentally petered out by June. In June, he had 6 home runs and 12 RBIs, but he had just 163. Prior to the All-Star break, he had 23 home runs, but only 8 in the second half. So a key for him, like I was talking to him, is, you know, being more consistent over the full season.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what his bugaboo was last year. He was pretty much the first 6 weeks of the season guy, and then did well in September as well. But between, you know, he had no meat. He was the bread, but no meat. And you need the meat because that's when a big part of the season is. So hopefully he's learned from that.
You're hungry, aren't you? I can tell.
Listen, I haven't had breakfast yet, Scott. You know, 9 o'clock show, got to wake up, get it ready, you know, and then I got a ref. So I mean, he didn't have lunch here. So little meat, nothing wrong with a little meat.
Well, why did you eat breakfast before the show? What time did you get up?
I'm the kind of guy, Scott, no matter what I'm doing, work, play, whatever, I don't get up early. I get up early to set things up, get dressed, you know, wash up, in this case, set up for the show. I'm not getting up that 5 minutes early to have something to eat. I'm just not.
How long does it take to eat something? Life. Do you have to, this palatial
I want my 5 minutes of
something?
Sleep, damn it. I stay up late, man, to watch all the games, so I want that extra 5 minutes of sleep. I'm also not hungry when I wake up. It generally takes an hour or two. Even during the week, I go to the gym when I wake up, and then I eat when I get home. I don't like to eat before the gym, so I think I'm just stuck in that mode. It just happens to be today, after the show, I have to leave here immediately to go ref, so I'll be shrugged. Maybe I'll eat during a commercial break, Scott. For you, I'll eat during a commercial break.
Okay, you never heard of a quick fast, have you?
I have heard of it. I don't honestly know what it is, but I have heard of it.
That's a fast
bar?
Breakfast.
Energy bar?
No, it's what they call a fast breakfast. It's like an old term for what a fast breakfast is. And you're telling me
Cocoa Puffs.
You take three minutes just to like chew on a bagel?
I don't have a bagel. I wish I had a bagel. See, now you're just teasing me, man, because I don't even have a bagel. And you know where I live. You're in Queens. You get good bagels. Out here, it's so tough. I live out in the middle of Long Island. So tough to find good bagels and good pizza. You have to search for it.
Although I'm living in Queens, though, the good bagel shops have disappeared. Although, you know, you can get some decent bagels, you know, from the supermarket. Just buy a six pack. I can't understand why you can't take 3 minutes just to like eat something. You need your energy before the show.
Energy's not
making
me worry
about
you. I'm sucking down some caffeine. I'm sucking down some caffeine, so I'm not worried about the energy. The stomach will be grumbling. You know, it probably is a little bit now. And I will have to eat something in the car on the way to go ref. But I'll be all right, Scott. I'm a hockey guy.
There's no good pizza in Long Island?
I didn't say there's no good pizza. It's harder to find. We have a million pizza places, but most of them are terrible. You know, it's just not good.
Really?
The crust isn't good. Sauce isn't good. I found a good place out here that I've lived here for 11 years. I damn well better find a good place. I love pizza.
Yeah, we can find some good ones in Queens. I think it all depends on where you grow up. And when I left for Florida, lived in Fort Lauderdale for 8 years, I hated the pizza.
Yeah, I got lots of family down in, not in the Fort Lauderdale, but in the Tampa Bay area. They all say the same thing. It's the first thing they want when they come up here, Scott. You know, they all grew up here
pizza
and they moved down.
Chinese
first thing they want.
Right?
Right? That's exactly right. Pizza and Chinese food, man. It's hard to beat. They say it's the water up here or something like that, I guess how they make it, whatever. But yeah, they all say the same thing. When are we going out for pizza?
So back to Eric Thames, who you know, doesn't look like he eats too much pizza. Talk about against lefties, they're using Ryan Braun and Jesus Aguilar. Last year, Thames hit .182 with 6 home runs and 11 RBIs against lefties. And you know, that's the reason why his stock dropped so much in drafts this year.
Yeah, because playing time was going to be an issue. And it's going to be an issue this year as well. A lot of cooks in the kitchen there, and someone's got to sit almost every game. Now, Ryan Braun came out of last night's game, I believe, with a stiff neck, back tightness, I'm sorry. So maybe he plays today. Maybe he's out a couple of days. We don't know. Braun, let's face it, he's always an injury waiting to happen. Guy rarely plays. He hasn't played more than 150 games in a season since 2012. Of that, it's been 61, 135, 140, 135. Last year was 104. So you know he's going to miss some games. But yeah, Thames is pretty much a platoon player, but he's on the right side. Well, I guess that's a pun in some ways. The right side of that platoon is he won't play against left-handers, and there aren't a lot of left-handers in baseball.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like a Justin Bour situation. Like Justin Bour is in that same sort of situation where he really doesn't get the playing time against lefties. You know, is Eric Thames that much better fantasy-wise than Justin Bour?
They are similar players. Ain't right, boom or bust. I think the question is, if you had a choice between the two, which one would you take here? And I would probably go Tanes because I like the ballpark a lot more than Miami. Plus, even though I keep going over how he struggled with people on base and with the RBIs, still, there'll be people on base in Milwaukee. I'm not so sure there'll be people on base in Miami.
By the way, I talked to him last year and said, you play fantasy football? And he said, no. And this year, he said, yes. In fact, Eric Thames was the champion of the Milwaukee Brewers Clubhouse League.
Go, Thames, go. Wonder if he had Todd Gurley on his team. But Todd Gurley ruined a lot of dreams for me.
But Lorenzo Cain said, now that I'm here, definitely got to watch out. We saw Jonathan Villar with his first home run last night. And Villar, who's a big disappointment last year, so far hitting .302 this year. He has two stolen bases. He's got three RBIs, got the homer. He's not giving you a lot of run production, but at least from an overall hitting juncture, he's doing better, although it seems like he's almost turned into a slap hitter early.
Well, the thing is this. Villar definitely was disappointing last year. Actually, that's probably putting it nicely. The thing is, if you drafted Villar, you wanted the stolen bases. I don't care about home runs. You know, I care about average, but I want those stolen bases, and two right now is not what I want. You know, it's on pace for pretty much 25, what he did last year. I need those stolen bases to get up here. The only difference is you probably didn't expect 60 this year, like he did in 2016 because of last season. You're maybe hoping for a happy medium, somewhere around the 40 range here. So I want to see him run more. You know, I certainly want to see that. He hasn't been thrown out, so that's not the reason why. It's not like he's having trouble stealing the bag. He's 2-for-2, but not really attempting many bases here, and that's somewhat concerning to me, Scott. Now, maybe there's always been somebody on base in front of him where he can't run. Maybe it's been with two outs, and they don't want him to run, whatever the reason is. But I need to see him run more right now. He's been on base. He hasn't walked yet either. That's another concern there. But he's got 14 hits. You know, like, see him run a little bit more. Probably need to see him get on base a little bit more, especially with singles and walks.
Talk about some pitching here. What the heck is going on with Ian Kennedy so far? Three quality starts, 18 innings pitch, 15 hits allowed. He struck out 16, and he's got a 1 ERA. What the heck is going on here? Ian Kennedy's still available in a lot of leagues, too.
He's the definition of a guy. Ride him while he's hot. He's hot. You pick him up, you start him, and you just ride it. Will it bust eventually? Of course. That balloon's busting. He's not going to pitch anywhere near this. But right now he's pitching well. Maybe it's the weather. He's pitched at Cleveland in bad weather, against the White Sox bad weather, against the Angels. Hell, it snowed in I know he wasn't pitching last night, but it snowed in KC last night during that game. That was fun to watch. I like watching snow in football, not so much in baseball. So I think it's a combination of all that. But I said he's hot, and he's, let's face it, White Sox, Indians, Angels, those are three good hitting teams. So I'm starting him right now, Scott, but I'm well aware that, maybe it's May, maybe it's next start. It's going to wear off here. He's going to start to get hit. He's not the kind of guy who's going to continue domination for much longer.
The Ks per nine is not up that much at all to 8. The FIP is 268. The XFIP is 355. But here's a stat for you to chew on. How about a 96.6 left on base percentage?
I'm looking at all the numbers now trying to figure out.
That LOB is incredibly outrageous.
Yeah, it is. He's 66 last
Usually
season.
When I say LOB, I'm thinking Legion of Boom.
Legion, I can't imagine why.
Boom.
I can't imagine why you would think that, Scott. Yeah, you're right. These numbers are going to go back to the mean. He's not going to strand 95% of his runners. He's pitching into good luck. I don't want to knock the guy. He's a fine major league pitcher, but fantasy-wise, don't count on him for the long term.
Is he a fine major league pitcher? He's okay. Fine.
Then that's fine. To me, that's what fine is. Fine. It's fine. I would take it.
Fine would be to be above average. I don't think he's above average.
No, I don't think he's above average.
He's above average? Yeah.
No, I think on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd probably put him at a 5.
Caught up on my definition of fine, as we usually do.
I keep having George Carlin go through my head here. He's fine.
Hair is fine. People are not fine.
Yeah. So George Carlin, my favorite comedian. So yeah, listen, he's the definition of a sell high. If you can sell him, you move on from him. This won't last long.
All right, we'll talk about other hot starting pitchers coming up next. And in the final hour, we'll look at some two-turn pitchers and streamers for the upcoming week. Talking lots of fantasy baseball, having fun here on the Roto Experts on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Ah, Little Prince. The song is about what Ian Kennedy's ERA is going to be over the next three starts, George.
Very good. Very good. 2 points for Scott Angle.
Yeah.
1999. 2 points for Mr. Angle. Look at that.
Well, you said it twice, so it's now 4 points.
Well, maybe I'm just looking at an ounce, you know. I'm not even giving you three.
How about Charlie Morton again so far? He's proven that last year was no illusion when he became a strikeout pitcher. He's got three quality starts already, 18 innings pitch, and 25 strikeouts with a 1 ERA. Charlie Morton's off to a terrific start.
Love Charlie Morton. Another player who I targeted in drafts. I have him in most of my leagues. I'm pretty pissed off yesterday, Scott, when they blew that lead. I needed that win. When you have a player in most of your leagues, if not all your leagues, and you lose it like that, that it ruins your night. It just ruined my night. You know, what is 7-7, whatever time, then Peacock blew that save. I was not happy. I really needed that W there. But hey, Morton looks great. Right now, I mean, I'm not saying he's the same pitcher as Scherzer, but right now he's pitching as well as anybody in baseball. And he's done this in his last postseason, in the postseason against good hitting teams. So I have a lot of faith in Morton. My only worry about Morton is he doesn't go deep into games. He throws a lot of pitches. He strikes out a lot of guys. He struggled with 12 yesterday. So he throws a lot of pitches. Tough for him to really get past the sixth inning. So that's my biggest concern from him. For him is that things like yesterday are going to happen. He's going to lose some wins because the bullpen's going to blow it. That's the one thing I'm concerned about with Morton. Other than that, he's not a sell-high guy for me because I want to keep him. I believe in Charlie Morton. I want him on my team.
What about Dylan Bundy? You know, he doesn't have any wins yet. He's been unlucky to the tune of 0-1. But other than that, he has a 1.33 ERA with a 1.96 FIP and a 2.50 xFIP. 11.25 Ks per nine so far. He is really pitched very well so far. The BABIP is not out of line with his career numbers so far. 2.83. The left-on-base percentage is a little bit high at 85.2%, but, you know, it's not an Ian Kennedy sort of territory right now. When you look at his pitch selection, it's a little bit more use of the fastball, a little bit more use of the slider. The curveball usage has been staying about the same, but he's using the changeup a little bit less. It's just Dylan Bundy's just – there's nothing in the advanced stats – to suggest that, you know, Dylan Bundy is not living up to this early performance.
No. I mean, with Bundy, if I'm going to play negative Ned here, you worry about the AFC East, the American League East. I worry about the AFC East too and the Patriots, but probably not in this context. You worry about the American League East. He pitches in a bandbox, right? He pitches in Camden Yards, good hitter's ballpark. His road games, going to be a lot of games, Yankee Stadium, Fenway Park, Rogers Center. Toronto, Yankees, board, three teams that can hit. So that's an overwhelming majority of his starts. You're not going to love what's going on there. I do wonder, though, the long season, too, if he wears down. but always doesn't make me dislike him now. He does look like a legitimate I'll give him an SP3 fantasy-wise, maybe even SP2 I can call him into, but I wonder as the season goes on, I like him better for season-long fantasy than I do for weekly, because I do wonder in those games he's going to have a blowout game, you know, where he's just getting 6 runs in 3 innings, something like that, because it's just balls flying out, the weather heats up, ball flies, better lineups, that sort of thing here. But I do believe in him. That being said, our own Matt Modica posted this on a poll. I thought this was interesting. He wants to know, who would you prefer from this point forward this season? Bundy, Berrios, or Bauer?
I'd probably go Berrios. I feel like he has the best upside of the three. And
I agree. I don't think he can.
Incredibly dominant performances that he's put on. He's had one clunker, but I just feel like Berrios has the highest ceiling, most sustainable in terms of combination of strikeouts and keeping the other ratios down.
I think what you said first is why I would go Berrios as well. Upside. I think Berrios has the chance to be that next big thing. You know, maybe it's more next year than this year. Bauer's close too for me. I really like Trevor Bauer and what he's done there. But I don't think he's quite in Berrios' category. I don't think quite the upside there, unless you want wins more than anything else once that lineup starts to hit. But I like all three pitchers here. But if I had to rank them, it would be Berrios, Bauer, Bundy.
Three Bs. Who do you like better?
Killer Bs.
Best of the three Bs. The killer bees.
I got other notes for you, by the way. Anthony Rendon's out today, and so is Mookie Betts, both nursing injuries. It's Sunday. You're going to have a lot of players not play today, plus a whole bunch of rainouts and delays. We already mentioned Toronto-Cleveland postponed, Minnesota and White Sox postponed, and Eric Boland, the Yankee beat writer for Newsday, is reporting that it's still raining and there's ice on the trees. It's 33 degrees in Detroit. Still don't think there's any way, at the very least, they get game one in. For the Yankees and Detroit Tigers.
Ice on the trees. How about that?
It's only mid-April, Scott. I mean, hey, ice is good. And hey, if you're a football guy, Daryl Worley was arrested, Philadelphia Eagles cornerback. He was tasered. Always nice to hear you tasered on Sunday morning. I guess had some issues with the cops. Was found passed out in his car. This is a guy who's had other legal problems with the law. And also, he's going to get suspended at some point.
There's no Aldis Smith yet.
Who is Scott?
No. How about Garrett Cole so far? The fact that he's only got one win is an absolute crime. 21 innings pitched, and he's got a 15.43 K per 9, 1.71 walks per 9, 129 ERA, 221 FIP. And here's the thing, you know, we talk about left on base percentage being lucky, but Garrett Cole has not allowed a single runner to score. Is that more about being lucky or just being really good when runners are on base? And what is going on with Garrett Cole so far when, you know, we were waiting for the true breakout? But so far, with a 129 ERA and in 36 strikeouts in 21 innings pitched, Garrett Cole has just been—he's been amazing so far. I think with the American League, maybe with the Astros, you expected some improvement, but to this degree, it's been crazy.
Well, you wonder with Garrett Cole—did he need to get out of Pittsburgh? And what I don't mean this as a knock on Pittsburgh. What I mean is he goes to Houston, where he gets sort of sink into the background. Justin Verlander is the man there. You know, and Verlander has no problem being, I don't want to say the center of attention, but being there, being the guy the media goes to, talking to the media. He's comfortable with it. He's done it. You know, Verlander deserves everything he gets, but it allows Cole to relax. And Dallas Keuchel's there as well. So he doesn't have to be the guy. With Pittsburgh, he had to be the guy. He had to go out and win. And not only did he have to go out and pitch well, but even that wouldn't guarantee you a win. Houston's the exact opposite. He can pitch poorly and still win. Because of that offense there and the fact that they probably are the best team in the American League. So I think that all helps Garrett Cole. He's another guy I targeted heavily. I was pretty pissed off in my home draft, a league I care about very much, when I wanted him. I think it was round 3, maybe round 4. And there were 6 pitchers, Scott, and I liked them all. And I think I had picked 7, and they all went in a row. And Cole wasn't – usually in a home league – you know, everybody uses the same sort of draft list. You know, maybe you put down ESPNs, whatever it is. And, you know, I'm looking at this list, and Cole's, like, ranked at, I think, 22. I'm like, oh, I'm easily going to get him. Only, like, 12 pitches have been taken. There's no way the guy before me takes Cole. He took Cole, and I wanted to put my fist through the computer because I was so, So disappointed that
he. See what happens when you don't eat breakfast? You know, you get temperamental too.
It was nighttime, although I'm pretty sure I didn't eat dinner. I was very angry. It was, usually I don't get angry during a draft. We all get sniped at times. It happens, you know. But I was just annoyed. It was two leagues that this happened where there was such a big pitcher's run that I lost a guy I wanted right before me. That can get frustrating. And Gerrit Cole was that guy. I believe in him. I like him. I think he's going – I mean, not to this degree. He's not going to strike out more than a batter and a half for every three outs he gets. But I think he's relaxed with Houston. I think it's going, just a great thing for Gerrit Cole. I think big things are coming.
You know, I don't get to experience it much with you, but outside of myself, you seem to know as angry George Kurtz.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know where that came from.
I don't like this. I don't like that kind of thing.
Yeah, I find it funny. I guess it's just it popped up a little bit maybe during football season, covering the games. I think you know, when things don't go your way, because I'm actually not I'm a very relaxed fantasy owner here. I've told you before, I don't watch the scores, my fantasy scores. I'm not that person because there's nothing I could do. Mostly, this year's weird. All the leagues I play in are weekly. I'm not even playing in any daily lineup leagues, which is so unusual for me because I like daily lineup leagues. You know, I prefer a daily roster move where you can make fab moves each night. You know, I used to play in a league like that. I'm not even playing in any of those this year. So unusual for me. I like those kind of leagues where you can do more interaction. So I'm a very relaxed fantasy owner, especially baseball. It's April 15th. The scores, the standings really don't mean much right now. You know, I set my lineup, make my moves. Other than that, I tend to like to relax and watch the games each night. I'm not saying I won't yell at the TV, Scott. It happens, certainly more in while watching football than it does baseball or hockey. But, yeah, I'm relaxed, generally poised watching the games. It's not like football season where that one week, you know, you go bananas because you have to win such a short season. Baseball, I'm well aware, it is a marathon, not a sprint. There's a nice little cliche for you. So I'm generally more relaxed. So, but the angry George, I kind of find funny, and sometimes I play into it.
Yeah, you're trying to bring out angry Scott by, you know, like kneeling me with cliches. You and I generally tend to get along good with each other, though. It's not like when I do radio with Corey.
Tony Sincato and I, one time, we were gonna come up with a whole bunch of cliches for you. I think we were all scheduled to do a show together. It ended up not happening, but we were going to come up with cliche after cliche. I mean, and listen, I was going to print out a thing of cliches.
Mike Florio wanted to do that, too, because he likes to pretend to be Corey.
Maybe it would be funny. Just see how when Scott would explode. The only thing is you would figure it out after a while they were doing it on purpose, and that would sort of lose some of the funny. You have to pick and choose when you're
comparing Dansby Swanson to Derek Jeter and said, I would never admit that I was wrong, when I've often admitted I was wrong, especially during football season, but I just didn't see the comparison at all.
So you remember things I don't. I tend to, once the show's over, I move on. I do remember talking about Swanson, and I like Swanson. I think probably the point I was making, I think he's a better major league player than he'll be a fantasy one. But I don't think it's a knock on him. I mean, not everyone's a great fantasy player. It doesn't mean you're a bad major league player. People get the two confused here. I'd want Swanson on the Yankees anytime because I think he'll be a good major league ball player. Maybe not on the Yankees. They're loaded in the middle infield. But I think fantasy-wise is someone I'm going to – because I just don't see the category he's going to help you in. You know, and that's my problem.
Yeah, but then you popped Jeter in there, and I said that, you know, did you ever see Swanson becoming a 15-20 player? And you said no. And I said Jeter had done it, I think, six or seven times.
Jeter in his time, I'm a Yankee fan, love Derek Jeter. Don't like really the person he's become now. He really stays away from the Yankees. I agree with him about not going to Yankee Stadium Monday and Tuesday. I do get it. It would be a zoo. But he had stayed away from the Yankees long before he had anything to do with the Marlins, which I don't get. Is he mad at the Yankees for how his career ended? Hell, they gave him a year.
He said it would be awkward to be there.
He's right. It would be. I have no problem with him not showing up this week, but even the last couple of years, he wouldn't go to Old Timers Day. He wouldn't go to anything. The only time he went back to a stadium was to have his number retired. That's it. You know, it's almost like he's mad at Cashman and the Yankees, even though, like I said, the Yankees gave him a year. Still let him bat second. Still let him play shortstop where he had no business doing so. You know, they gave him a year to do that. So I don't understand why he seems to be so angry at the organization. I think they were both great for each other. He was obviously great for the Yankees. The Yankees were great.
Is he really angry, though, or just, you know, he's
seems
just
to
doing
be.
His thing?
I mean, I'm not talking about this year.
I've also heard around City Field, people saying, why isn't Tom Seaver around here more often?
But he got screwed by the Mets. I sort of understand that back in the summer when he got traded. I could see the anger
there.
That
was so – that was so long ago that like I, that doesn't even play into anybody's mind anymore. Like the Midnight Massacre from 77. I just think he's older and maybe he's not feeling as well as he used to be. Hopefully he's doing okay. I saw him at Citi Field a few years ago, but he's not around a lot. He does live all the way in California.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. Like I said, if you're an ex-player, you don't want to come around, you want to do your own thing. I don't have an issue with that.
I don't think he's holding a grudge from 40 years ago.
I hope not. I really hope not. But I think Seager was a little different. I'm talking about Jeter. He's only retired a couple of years. And he was staying away. For whatever reason it is, I think there is some anger there for how I guess he wanted to continue playing. And obviously the Yankees had to move on there. But it's a shame because I was certainly a big Derek Jeter fan. Remember everything he's done for the team. Guy who, if there is such thing as being a clutch player, he was it. Because he was actually seemed to be a better player in the playoffs than he was during the regular season. But a guy who would do anything he could to win a game.
Yeah. It's and you know, he was a top three fantasy shortstop for a good stretch there for about six, 7 years during his prime.
Come on. He was playing with guys with A-Rod, Tejada, Garcia. He was never top three.
He was the third or fourth shortstop off the board in a lot of drafts.
No, well, like in New York things, maybe people were drafting. No. I think you're forgetting a lot of good shortstops over in baseball.
But Tejada didn't have that long of a prime, though.
But he was a better player when he was.
Yeah. But Jeter was consistently like 300, 15 home runs, 20 steals, you know, in that range.
He was never a top three shortstop. I want to see his ADP being top three shortstop. Please send that to me, and I'll admit I'm wrong about Jeter. There's no way
he was ever
top three. He's like he was top 10.
No. You underrate him as far as fantasy goes in retrospect.
I am not underrating him. I played in all those leagues, man. I mean, he was drafted higher than what he should have been because we played in a lot of New York leagues and a lot of New York fans.
Well, the guy was consistently 315-20, though. That's pretty darn good. To get put up those kind of
numbers. Imagine what you are compared to everybody else at that time. There were other good shortstops.
No, he wasn't on the same level as A-Rod and Garcia Parra, but I can't seem to remember anybody else that was really that much better than him otherwise.
All right. Well, instead of eating my bagel during the next commercial break, now I'm going to have to look.
Jose Reyes had the potential, but he was never able to stay healthy.
But he was drafted ahead of him because he had, mainly for the stolen bases, he had that Jeter never had a category he was going to do great outside of average. He never had that category where he was going to be, oh, wow, you know, we can rely on Jeter for this. You couldn't.
Yeah, but he filled it up nicely across the board, though.
Yeah, but he wasn't drafted for that. Once again, that's the point here. Yes, he was a fantasy player, but certainly wasn't top three. You want to make a top eight, I'll buy that.
Can you name me seven other shortstops that you'd probably rather have ahead of him?
It doesn't matter. I don't have to name him. What were people drafting him at? I don't know if I can go to ADP for each year.
I mean, he was a top 10 fan. According to Tristan Cockcroft of ESPN, he was a top 10 fantasy player in 2006 and 2009. Top 25 three times.
But that's where he ended up,
times.
Not where he was drafted. That's
no,
completely
I'm talking about
different.
Overall. I'm not talking just a shortstop. Top 10 player overall
right.
in fantasy.
But I'm talking about where he was at draft time, where he was drafted. Not where his season numbers ended up. People weren't drafting him to be a top 10 player.
Consistently remember
that's first
him
round
like
pick.
Top 3 to top 5. All right. Well, whatever. We're not going to draft him today. And we'll talk about two star pitchers coming up next here on the Roto Experts on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.